Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good morning to you all and welcome to DW's Africa Link program. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, President Buhari of Nigeria calls on his countrymen and neighbors to take up the fight against Boko Haram Islamists.
We must therefore strengthen our cross-border patrols and increase our capacity to gather and share intelligence.
The Cameroonian government shuts down several media outlets, accusing them of breaking ethics of journalism.
This atmosphere of freedom runs into people's heads, and some people have become mad about it. They don't consider the real norms. It's just throw it out, even without verification.
Zimbabwe's ruling party, ZANU-PF, wins all 16 seats in parliamentary by-elections after the main opposition boycotted the vote over allegations of a rigged electoral roll. Stay tuned.
Top story.
We begin in Nigeria, where the country has called for one of its commanders to be put in charge of a new regional force fighting Boko Haram. The request was made by President Muhammadu Buhari as he hosted talks to discuss military strategy with coalition leaders from Niger, Chad, Cameroon and Benin. Nigeria's military last week announced that Major General Tukul Buratai had taken charge of the multinational joint task force MNJTF, which has its headquarters in Chad's capital, N'Djamena. For more on the talks, Ben Shemang in Abuja spoke to Africa Link's Crispin Makideu.
Yes, the president is so much under pressure in Nigeria to defeat Boko Haram. And you recall, that was also a campaign tool. And of course, he has won the election. Therefore, Nigerians are saying this was part of your campaign promises that you end insurgency. And that is why the president is under a very great pressure to ensure that Boko Haram is defeated. Hence, these urgent actions he is taking.
But does the president also have the support of the majority of Nigerians on how he has begun to handle the insurgency, moving the command center to Maiduguri and calling on Nigeria now to take the leading role in this fight against Boko Haram?
Of course, the president has this support of Nigerians. The movement of the command center of these operations to rout the Boko Haram members has been moved to Maiduguri. And Nigerians again are feeling that is the thing that ought to have been done since. And even some of the soldiers who are fighting the war, they're now feeling that, look, the high command of the military is very close to them. Therefore, they are feeling at home. And of course, not staying some hundreds of kilometers away from the operational theater.
And what about the regional leaders themselves? What is their relationship with the new president? Do you see that becoming even stronger, or are there signs that the coalition could start to show cracks?
Well, I see that the president has landed running, so to speak, and therefore he has gone around the regional, the contiguous countries. He's gone to Chad, he's gone to Niger Republic. And from the meeting in Abuja, he's saying that very soon he'll go into some other travel within the West African region to ensure that Boko Haram is seen not just as a Nigerian issue, not just as an issue belonging to Chad, Cameroon, and Niger Republic, but it should be seen as a West African issue, an African issue, and a global matter. Crispin, just listen to what the president said.
Our campaign against insurgency must therefore be directed on all fronts, starting from limiting their capacity to access funds and weapons. We must therefore strengthen our cross-border patrols and increase our capacity to gather and share intelligence. Our campaign against Boko Haram must be seen within the wider context of the global war against terror. Terrorism has no frontiers, and they must, because of the great implication for regional and global peace and security, be defeated.
Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari there. We understand that Boko Haram has staged another attack and about 43 people have lost their lives. How much of a setback are these attacks to President Buhari's efforts to defeat the insurgency?
Well, honestly, these attacks are so disturbing. And each that comes, the president is always reacting. The president wants to move. And that is why he has pledged the sum of over $100 million to this fight, and that's why he also wants the commander to come from Nigeria, because Nigeria remains the greatest victim. Nigeria is also supplying the largest chunk of the weapons to execute this war. So he's taking it with every sense of seriousness, because he would want to prove a point, not just to Nigerians, but the entire Committee of Nations.
Ben Chimang in Abuja. Coalition forces have recorded considerable success against Boko Haram. So will Thursday's meeting between regional leaders enhance more cooperation to end the insurgency? To answer that question, here's Jan St-Pierre, an analyst with security consulting group Mosecon in Berlin.
Well, Thursday's meetings are an important stepping stone. Now, obviously, there's been a lot of tension. There's been a lot of squabbles and arguments between all the coalition and the task force partners. So this is a big step, but it's still a lot of work to do. I expect the negotiation process and setting up the coalition to take a lot more time. But the first meeting is definitely a good first step, including having the chiefs of staff meet earlier this week. Now having the presidents meet, definitely this is a good step.
President Muhammadu Buhari of Nigeria has made no secret of his intentions to steer the Boko Haram counterinsurgency. But what's the likelihood that his goal or his ambition could upset the coalition?
It's very likely. One of the things associated with forming that coalition has been, and since it started again being more effective at the end of January, was the prestige associated to it. We saw the way Chad really took credit for a lot of the actions, for a lot of the attacks. President Deby making a lot of veiled criticism or very open criticism to the way the Nigerian army conducted itself. Even Niger was in a position to take some shots at Nigeria. So obviously, Nigeria trying to say, well, we want this to be our show. We'll create some friction. But this is the case in any coalition. But if you consider that Boko Haram started out of Nigeria and it's still mainly a Nigerian problem, this is actually a very logical step. But the political and prestige implications will make it more difficult.
So in your opinion, is President of Nigeria Buhari right in wanting to take control of this counterinsurgency, or is he just trying to, you know, save face?
It's more than saving face. He has to show that the Nigerian army is in a position to defend its citizens. That it's in a position to defend the country, to take a leading role again in the region. Yes, Chad has done some good work, and Niger as well, but this has been the Nigerian army's problem all along. They've had problem fighting Boko Haram, and now they need to get that strong pulse back. They need to find a way to become confident again and lead the fight against Boko Haram. And this is what President Buhari is trying to do. And it follows step with having parts of the command center being transferred to Maiduguri, with having the chiefs of staff meeting. There's truly an initiative there to show we're willing to do what it takes, and we're willing to take the leadership role that should have been ours all along again. So this is a lot more than saving face.
There were suggestions by the coalition that a six-month rotational command structure should be put in place. What do you make of such an arrangement?
This is a political arrangement very often. It's designed to accommodate, again, the prestige and the political implications of such a coalition, but it rarely functions. President Buhari's argument has been, well, we don't want a rotation because we need the stability. In this case, he would be right. You want, especially with such a complex problem that is evolving into a supra-regional problem, you want a certain stability in the chain of command. You want a stability in the strategy, and you want to make sure that the particular national interests of each group involved don't necessarily overtake the regional interests. And this is where having one steady commandment that is set to go well beyond 6 months is very, very important.
Security analyst with Mosecon Consulting Group, Jan St-Pierre, speaking to Crispin Mwakideu.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
Zimbabwe's ruling party, ZANU-PF, won all the 16 seats in a parliamentary by-election after the main opposition boycotted the vote over allegations of a rigged electoral roll. President Robert Mugabe's ZANU-PF party extended its grip on power after being unopposed in several constituencies or facing little-known independents and minor opposition parties. The constituencies voting included seats in the capital, Harare, and the second city of Bulawayo that had been held by the opposition, Movement for Democratic Change, MDC, since 2000. Our correspondent in Harare, Columbus Mavunga, has been telling me more on the reactions from the opposition after ZANU-PF party swept all the seats and what it now means for the ruling party.
It means now they've increased their two-thirds majority and they can change the constitution should they want to do that.
And how has the opposition reacted to the results?
They are saying this was not an election. They are saying the conditions under which the by-elections were held are not conducive for a free and credible election. So they said they did not take part and will not take part unless there are genuine democratic reforms, if I may use their word.
In an interview conducted on Wednesday, former Finance Minister Tendai Biti told Africa Link that Zimbabwe's opposition needs a new face. Is that opinion shared by many opposition supporters in Harare, where you are?
Yeah, I think that's gradually sinking into people's heads that the opposition, I think, since 2000, has been headed by former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai, I think, has been losing. And they say maybe if someone else come with new ideas and strategies, they will be able to remove ZANU-PF from power.
Well, the opposition boycotted the elections, and it's not the first time that they talk of a boycott. What do ordinary Zimbabweans think about boycotting, you know, elections?
I think it's a mixed grill. Some are saying the opposition have a genuine case. There should be reforms where the ruling party has little say in how elections should be conducted. But others are saying when you're in opposition, your aim is to get into power, and you can only do that if you contest in elections. So those with such a mind say the opposition should have contested in the election, no matter how unfair the ground they might see it as.
Columbus Mavunga in Harare.
Human rights.
Now, one of the fundamental human rights is that of accessing and disseminating information. But that right is under threat in Cameroon, according to a section of journalists. This comes after the Cameroonian government shut down several media outlets and suspended a number of reporters. The country's media regulatory body accuses the journalists of breaking journalism ethics by reprinting what it says was unverified article about the health of President Paul Biya. As Mokinzeka reports in Yaoundé, it's not just the presidency which has an issue with the media.
These are the voices of suspended Cameroonian journalists, names withheld, disguised as humorists to broadcast information. The two were suspended by Cameroon's National Communication Council, NCC, this week. Its acting president, Peter Isoka, accuses the two of not respecting journalistic ethics.
Sometimes this atmosphere of freedom runs into people's heads, and some people have become mad about it. They don't consider the real norms. It's just throw it out, even without verification of what is happening.
Isoka says six news organs and about 10 journalists have been suspended for rebroadcasting information published by the Paris-based Le Monde newspaper. That report alleges that 83-year-old Cameroonian President Paul Biya was suffering from a terminal disease and had been rushed to a specialized hospital in Europe.
Did that president tell you that he is sick? When the president was leaving Cameroon, did he say, I'm going to this for a health purpose? Maybe Le Monde got information that he was sick and bang, they published it. Now, the newspapers in Cameroon picked it up. If they made a commentary on it, which would even favor the fact that the president was sick, it would have been a different issue. But when you take it verbatim and put it in your own newspaper, it means you are confirming, whereas you haven't verified.
Journalist Kininsom of the Post newspaper says the NCC was wrong to suspend the media outlets. he defended the move to republish the report, saying reporters find it difficult to gain access to information concerning Cameroon's president as well as institutions close to the leader.
You cannot move to the presidency and verify information. There are certain institutions that are like no-go areas for journalists. The presidency of the republic has never at any one moment granted a press conference to the national press. The prime minister the same. We cannot be pretending.
But the presidency is not the only untouchable institution when it comes to reporting. Senior government officials also led to some of the journalists being suspended. The government officials complained to the NCC that the media had trampled upon their rights by publishing their names in cases related to corruption. They argued that since they were still considered suspects, the media had erred by revealing their identities. Journalist Ngala Killian of state-owned CRTV says the NCC was just the wrong place to handle the issues because it is controlled by the government.
When you look at the constitution of the National Communication Council, the director is appointed by the President of the Republic, and that director is executing the opinions of the head of state. I think they are actually gagging the press. Everybody is looking up to the press. It's curious to start banning press organs.
More than 30 media organs and journalists have been suspended by the NCC within the past 2 years. But still, NCC Acting President Peter Isoka says his institution does not bow to pressure from the governing class.
I have received calls from almost the highest point of this country. What are you doing with this case? What are you doing this? Mr. Minister, sir, you have nothing to do with us to tell you about our decisions. And I like to believe that I am humble enough to tell somebody, sorry, sir, we'll not be able to treat it this way because we have a procedure by which we follow.
That report was compiled by Moke Kinzeka in Yaoundé. You are listening to DW Africa Link from Bonn, Germany. Let's turn to football now with the 2015 FIFA Women's World Cup going on in Canada. Three African countries are participating in the tournament. All eyes are set on Nigeria's Super Falcons, Africa's reigning champions of women's football. This evening, they'll be taking on Australia after an impressive 3-3 draw with Sweden. African teams have a poor record in past tournaments, which analysts attribute to the poor state of women's football in Africa. Samuel Lukwe reports from Lagos.
A group of young female footballers take time off from their training session to sing. But all is not rosy as it seems. According to 20-year-old professional female footballer Igemeka Eke, who started playing football at the age of 15, life is difficult for women who play football in Nigeria because their teams are normally cash-strapped.
Actually, the major problem we are having is normally sponsors. If they can be treating us the way they are treating men, I think it will boost many girls to be motivated in the game. If you watch in some tournament, you see that girls are doing more better than the boys. But if you watch, the finance which they are giving to the girls is very poor.
In Mushi, Lagos, members of the female football team, Robo FC, train on a waterlogged pitch. The team which plays in Nigeria's Premiership is a good example of how difficult it is for a football team to operate with very lean finances. Limited funding means the team cannot afford some basic services. The team's bus is a very old, slow-moving vehicle. Sometimes the team travels all night to the venue of away matches. In many instances, they arrive so late that they drive to the stadium without having any sleep or rest. Team's coach Emmanuel Osaho said culture is one of the factors affecting the development of women's football in Nigeria and other parts of Africa.
Africa is the kind of place that women are less favored. We all of us believe the woman's office is in the kitchen. So male football grew faster in Africa more than female football because we are implementing traditional culture. And some people believe so much that the job playing football is very, very tedious. So maybe most girls cannot stand it. So it has deprived them the ability to rise when they were supposed to rise with the men.
In Nigeria, authorities say they are taking steps to address some of the factors affecting women's football. Amaju Pinnick is president of the Nigerian Football Association.
There's a lot going on, and that's what we're trying to do, because women, female football is different from men radically. You have to go to their parents, you have to talk to their parents, you have to talk to their folks. You have to make them understand that their children are going to be taken care of. Nobody will be molested, nobody will be violated. You know, you have to make them understand all those things, and those are the things we have put in place.
In the face of the security challenges facing Nigeria with the Islamist group Boko Haram using women as suicide bombers, many believe the government has to step up support for programs that can empower women. One of these is support for women's football.
Sam Olkoya in Lagos.
Your say.
And it's that time of the week when we turn the microphone to you, the listener, to tell us your opinion on the stories that we've covered. Here's Abubakar Jallo and Crispin Makdeo.
This week, we have some responses concerning Nigeria's military command moving from Abuja to Maiduguri.
Yes, we've been reporting that Nigeria's military has begun shifting the command center that controls its fight against Boko Haram militants to Maiduguri, the birthplace of the insurgency. President Muhammadu Buhari announced the shift in his inaugural speech on May the 29th. Buhari said the insurgents would not be defeated until military command and control was based at the heart of the uprising.
We have two really interesting responses. One is from Usman bin Affan in Damaturu, Yobe State, Nigeria. He wrote, "I am quite sure that relocating the security command center to Maiduguri could help in terminating Boko Haram. Another important point is that the soldiers fighting the insurgents do not have enough weapons. The National Defense Headquarters in Abuja keeps everything. That means when Boko Haram carries out an attack, the army has to fly its planes from Abuja, and to repel the attack may take hours. If the defense headquarters is relocated to Maiduguri, the army can waste no time to fight the Islamists back." And the second one is from Aliyu Mohammed Al-Kassim, also in Damaturu, Yobe State, Nigeria. He said, "The relocation will help in giving the military the edge to fight the militants. Nigerian army might not have had a high number of soldiers running away from the battlefield if their top commanders were around."
Very, very interesting comments from both of them. So,
indeed.
Who do you think will or should win the prize for this week's Yosei?
Actually, I quite like both responses here. The only thing is Aliyu won last week's prize, so automatically this one goes to Usman.
Right, but what else are the listeners talking about out there?
Okay, so I also received responses on our Facebook page, DW News, on an article about Ghana's drive towards reforestation.
We reported that the Ghanaian government is sounding the alarm bells over the rapid disappearance of forests and now wants millions of school children to plant and nurture trees.
There we have this comment from Rajan via Katil, who said, "Indiscriminate and unchecked logging in many parts of Africa is catapulting global change for the worst." And Francine Mandeville also said, "This is the kind of program that should have started years ago. When you let people take everything out of the land and not replant, you are on a road to disaster. How very ignorant are those in power not to address such issues?"
Right. Thank you very much, Abu. And thanks for all those who made those comments. And are there any other businesses still?
I received letters from Ali Poede in Sefwi Bakwai.
Can you repeat that again? How do you pronounce that name? Is it Sefwi Bakwai?
Sefwi Bakwai from Western Region of Ghana. Hopefully I got that right, Sefwi.
We might have to talk to Isaac Kalechi, our correspondent,
yeah,
to give us the correct pronunciation of that.
Yeah. And also Bethel Ginigeme in Onitsha, Anambra State, Nigeria, and several letters from John Bakima Samvura in Musanza, Northern Province of Rwanda. Their letters are mostly addressing private issues, but what stands out is that they are asking for DW gifts.
Okay, and do you have any gifts for them?
Actually, we've been receiving so many letters from listeners asking us for gifts. Now, to get a gift from us, all you need to do is comment on the issues we are reporting here on Africa Link or on our website dw.de/Africa. We select a winner every week for some great prizes. For this week, Usman bin Affan in Damaturu, Yobe State, Nigeria is the winner. And Usman, if you are listening to this, send us your contact address and we will send you your prize. That's all from me.
Thanks indeed, Abu Bakal and Crispin. And now, a reminder of the stories we've covered. Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari wants his country to take command of the anti-Boko Haram regional force. Cameroon shuts down several media outlets, accusing them of breaking ethics of journalism. That's it from me from Bonn. I'm Isaac Mugabe, wishing you a splendid weekend ahead.